From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Having been raised in the presence of a Depression-era grandmother who even went to college to study home economics, I have a built-in thing about food waste. So I was delighted to see a new cookbook from the James Beard Foundation called Waste Not, and a campaign of anti-food waste advocacy spearheaded by that organization. More in a moment on smarter cooking with an eye to utilizing every drop of goodness, but first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Today's guest, Chef Tiffany Deary, is a contributor to the Waste Not Cookbook from James Beard Foundation, a chef and a former star and fan favorite of the Top Chef show, among other culinary accomplishments. Hello, Tiffany. Thanks for making time for me today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we're talking to you from Dallas, right? Is that where you are? You're in the Dallas area?
Yes, yeah. That's correct.
Okay. I'm glad we're talking now for this show that, you know, is going to air right before Thanksgiving and the beginning of that holiday season, because, you know, no time is sort of more urgent, I think, to get tactical about avoiding waste, is it, in the kitchen?
Right. I mean, when you have, first off, the holiday time, and you think about how much is truly wasted, so it couldn't be a better time to discuss it, because people don't use full use of their vegetables, you know?
Yeah.
When they're using carrots, they cut off those bottoms,
yeah,
and throw away the tops and, you know, shave off all of the outside of the skin. And, you know, it's a time for us to step back and think, okay, how do I contribute to the environment? What am I doing in my household? How can I be better? And the question I hear a lot of people say is, well, I don't know where to start. I mean, you know, tell me. And so I think the Waste Not book is a great example and can get people on the right track.
Yeah, and the new cookbook has some startling sort of stats about waste. You probably know them by heart. I don't know.
But, yeah. I mean, for me, I remember the first time I went to the James Beard boot camp, and it's kind of this place where we go to some farm or in some area, and it's a group of chefs, sometimes about 10 to 12 of us, and we all learn sort of what's happening around the country. And at that time, we were talking about the Farm Bill and the food waste particular part of it.
Yeah.
And they told us that 40% of the food grown in the U.S. gets thrown away. And that
wow.
just blew my mind.
Wow.
I'm like, 40%. And then I'm like, is it in the restaurant? Is it people's home? And they're like, no, including food that never makes it off of the farm, vegetables grown that are allowed to fall simply because, you know, not enough demand for it, too much of a short season, not enough employees to get it at that timeline. You know, just staggering amount of information. And I remember just seeing 40%. And I kept thinking about how many people are hungry in this country.
Right.
And we are throwing away food. I'm like, we have to do better. What can I do? Teach me.
Yeah. And so, and that as a sort of corollary to that, I think it's that 25% of all the fresh water in the United States is used to produce food that's wasted. Mm-hmm. So we're squandering yes. our most precious resource of all, that on which all life mm-hmm. depends, including the food we're mm-hmm. trying to grow and the animals we're trying to grow for food and blah, blah, blah. So it's a water
exactly.
wasting too, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, from water to diesel, when you think about it, I mean, there are
yes.
many things that we are using to produce these things that, again, are going ultimately back in our landfills.
Yeah.
So there's major issues there.
Yeah. So you just mentioned boot camp, and I think I read a little bit about you, and I think you went, was it in 2012 you went to the boot camp? I can't remember what year, but when you did, was it one of the earlier classes? I can't remember, but the people who contributed to this book, many of them went to the boot camp, I think. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. A lot of the contributors have gone through boot camp.
Yeah.
I believe there's over maybe 200 chefs who've all gone through the boot camp to become advocates on sustainability and social issues. And so the boot camp just kind of gets you ready and empowers you to go back into your community and, you know, figure out ways to make it happen. But I remember I was at the boot camp with Rick Bayless, you
know?
Yes, of
course,
and I was
like, sure.
Rick Bayless, you know, it's just, you know, we all have our fans of chefs as well, and you're with great folks doing amazing things in their communities.
Yeah. So that's another prong. The book is one prong. The boot camp for a number of years has been one element of this advocacy. And I guess there's other parts of the campaign as well that James Beard Foundation is getting behind. So it's a big effort on a lot of fronts.
Correct.
Yeah. So, and one thing is called Waste Not Wednesday, and that's part of the campaign. Mm-hmm. And I've seen you did like a public service announcement for that, which I can play, I can embed in the transcript of this show for listeners and readers to watch. But So, you know, let's say we're going to try to waste not every day of the week. If we kind of closed our eyes and you told us like how you'd set up your kitchen or how you are, what it looks like where you are working as an expert at this, someone who knows not just great cooking techniques, but also has this in mind, the saving of food and utilizing every drop. How do we get ourselves ready? Because I think if we're not planning in advance, if we're not anticipating, stuff's going to go in the trash, right? It's going to get wasted, isn't it?
You are so right. Yes. I think that, again, we have to become thoughtful, intentional cooks.
Right.
And in this process, you're thinking about how do I use every piece of everything, right?
Yes.
You know, if I have a recipe in the book, the whole jerk fish.
Yes.
And in the whole jerk fish, people are scared. People are scared to use fish. They're scared of the eye. They think it's difficult. There's just so, you know, I'm like, it's just so tasty, though.
Uh-huh.
Some of the most flavorful protein come from using meat off the bone, right? That's where you get all that extra flavor. But on top of that, it's cheaper. It's not as difficult as it seems. And so in the book, you know, we use the whole jerk fish, and then I take the leftover, all of those scraps and pieces of fish, chunks of it, because, you know, if you're feeding a family of two or four, you're going to have, once you buy a nice size fish, you're going to have some scraps left. And that next meal became fish tacos.
Right.
And I ended up using some of those same herbs that I had left that I used to make the jerk marinade. And you can add in carrots, we added in peppers, you know, just kind of creating that flavor of something fresh. I mean, then we took that same fish with the bones and made a beautiful stock, a fish stock. And then everything else that we could not use, whether it be vegetables, whether it be, you know, some of the scraps left from the herbs that may have turned, went into our compost.
Right.
So, making compost the final decision.
Yeah. So you, from this whole fish, you first of all saved money by not buying the much more expensive filet, which would have just given you the one meal, right? You know what I
Correct.
Mean? Correct. And so then you ended up with all or part of three meals, at least. You know, the stock, assuming, is going into something later, maybe a soup or whatever. So
Correct.
So much of a better use and not so much squandered. I mean, who knows what happens to when the filet is done at the fishmonger, who knows what happens to all the other parts? I have no idea. Hopefully they're being sensible and planning ahead, and they have ways of using it that they're not throwing it away. So and you just mentioned the marinade, the jerk flavoring. I was really interested to see that you advocated, you know, it's not just the perfect little leaflets off the herbs. It's like the whole thing's going in there. Tell us about that.
you know, because it starts in culinary. You know, at culinary school, you're taught to pick the leaves. You're taught to, you know, separate this. And this is only for stock. You know, the things are just made for stock. And so I remember one day just picking up and just eating it. Like, this tastes good. Why am I throwing this away? Why am I just adding this into stock? You know, it's so much better if we use it all.
Right. Right. Like you might not garnish as you were sending a dish out of the restaurant kitchen. You might not garnish with like the whole stalk of something, you know, of parsley, whatever, you know,
that
is 10 inches long with the leaflets at the end. But certainly it has a place, doesn't it, that bit?
And it does.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so everything has its place, really, when you think about it. We were talking about the tomatoes, and people, a lot of times we look for the perfect tomato, right? We're spending our hard-earned money. We want a great-looking tomato. So we go and we get that tomato, and we can do beautiful tomato salads with it. You know, we can slice it up and put it on sandwiches. We can do so much with it in that state of just being ripe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then it starts to go and ripen even more. So now you have that overripened tomato. It's not about figuring out, now it's no good. Now I have to throw it away. It's about also understanding that, hey, what's the purpose for this tomato? I can't use this overripe tomato as a sandwich anymore, but now it's perfect for soup, right? Now it's perfect for pureed sauces and stews and things of that case. So some of it is education, and then some of it is, again, just thinking about it and becoming that intentional cook.
Right. So in your kitchen, whether a professional kitchen or especially your home kitchen, are there vessels that receive all these bits and bobs that you're going to use later? Like, how, do you know what I mean? Are you set up in a particular way? Is there a container in your fridge that you're putting trimmings in until you have enough to make some stock? Or what are you doing?
Yes, actually, yes. Everything that, most of the tops, if it's tops, we use in our salad mixes. So it doesn't matter what salad, it goes on sandwiches. So if I have carrot top that goes in, I have Swiss chard, we chop it up. Everything is chopped into a chiffonade. So it kind of goes into the mix, adding a little bit of flavor. At home, I use everything. So if I'm not using it today, it may become an herb sauce for a fish or chicken or and then at home, nobody else cooks here.
At home,
I'm not salty about that at all, but at home, I will puree it all and just top it with a little olive oil in a mason jar and just use it as a base sauce every time I'm needing something in the kitchen.
Oh, interesting.
And then I do a lot of stocks as well, and I freeze them. But I'll reduce them down so that they're more concentrated so they don't take up too much space in the refrigerator or
right.
in the freezer.
Right. And really, the freezer, I feel like the freezer is my best friend in home economics in general. You know what I mean? I'm a household of one, but who's going to cook a special recipe for one person every day? I might not want to do that,
right.
but I'll cook a big batch and then I'll portion and I'll freeze. And so that's one way that, you know, I can cook better quality food and take more care with it, but make it worth my while, both in time and then in using everything, making a big batch. Because there's a lot of waste
exactly.
if you really cook for one, because nothing's packaged for a single serving. Do you know what I mean?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is for folks to remember that it's okay to use your freezer to freeze the leftover fish bones. If you're not ready to make that stock,
right.
you can freeze everything that's needed to go in that stock and have it in the freezer for that day where you're just at home, maybe you're cleaning, you know, you just have a little extra time.
Yes.
And do it when it works for you.
Yeah. I was in the cookbook, in the Waste Not cookbook from James Beard Foundation, I was fascinated to see some of the recipes are really fun and that your colleagues contributed. And maybe two of them talk about using the juicer as a sort of both maybe when stuff's a little bit, you're not going to use it, you could like juice up leftover trimmings and use them later in something like in a stock or whatever. But also the idea of that the leftover pulp of juicing vegetables could go into a veggie burger. I thought that was pretty wacky.
Yes. It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when
yeah.
you think about what you're left with when you're juicing, it's so much.
It's really wasteful
and
if you don't have a
texture.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
yeah.
perfect texture for burgers when you really think about it. When you think about, you know, that leftover, it's already dry. It's got flavor in it.
Fiber.
It's also great as a thickener.
A thickener. Oh.
Yes, for soups. We do it a lot of times at home for soups.
So, like,
so
what,
we just add that right on in.
What kind of vegetables would be good as a thickener? Like, you mean like carrot?
Carrot,
celery.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Huh. Interesting.
Carrot and celery. Once it gets kind of rehydrated a little bit more, once you put it into the soup, it'll thicken it slightly. And you're like, whoa, I need a little water here. My first time. I'm like,
right. Right. So the some of the other kind of fun recipes you were talking about, you know, using the even the stems of things in your chiffonade, you know, where you're making your herbal marinade or whatever flavorings and so forth. And there was a stem gratin made of Swiss chard stems. And I don't know about you, but I liked the stem. I cut out the Swiss chard stems if they're really big and cook them first a little bit more before I wilt the leaves. Do you know what I mean? So that they're...
Oh, I do. 100%. Yeah. That's the best. You know what? And I love the crunch of stems. We did a salad Monday at the restaurant, and we did... it was kind of a play on a kale mustard green salad. And so I took mustard green lettuce, and we had it fresh and had some collards in there and a little bit of kale. And it really, it came about because it was like, what do we have left for the day? And I was doing this party, and I did pickled mustard green stems.
Oh, good
and
idea.
They are delicious because there's this little peppery, spicy component that's still in that stem with the crunch. It's delicious. It's delicious. And we added a few duck fat breadcrumbs on the top and some pecorino romano cheese, and it just made a fabulous salad. I kept eating it. I kept going back to that one.
Stock, making stock, because it seems like a lot of you are talking about, you know, you can put the stuff in the freezer, whether it's the fish bones or the poultry bones or in bits of vegetables, you know, the tops of carrots and so forth. You could have a bag working until you get enough. I mean, I even use onion peels. I you know, the ends and the peels, I use that because I grow the, I mean, I know where the onions came from. I know that it's not nasty or whatever. You know what I mean? It's grown clean and so forth without sprays. And so I'll have all that. But do you have like are there stock sort of recipes that you adhere to, or are you a little loosey-goosey about it? Or
no, we're completely loosey-goosey when it comes to the stocks. When it comes to the vegetable in the stock, the meat, we still keep kind of the same amount of bone in it. But it's whatever we have. We try not to put too much leaf, more so stem, because I don't want to change the color of it. And the onion skins are a great way to add, especially yellow onion, that golden amber color.
It's so beautiful, isn't it?
Stocks.
Yeah. It's a natural dye, really, onion skin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yes, that's correct. So it adds a great flavor, finishes the stock with a beautiful color. So just using all of that, even carrots, you know, you add that hint of color, adds that flavor. And you can let them cook, you know, fish stock and shrimp stock. Those are quick cooking stocks. They're done in 30 to 40 minutes. The chicken and beef stock, those take a little longer or take a lot longer. So when you have some of that, and I put herbs in stages sometimes, you know. So if I have, we're cutting and we're using, I'll say just add it to the stock pot. And then by the end, we're getting kind of that fresh herb flavor as well.
I remember it's making me think about your jerk fish again, the whole fish again, and one of the elements in that, the flavoring of that, was ginger. And I always hate I hate peeling ginger because it's sort of a knobby, nasty little creature. You know what I mean? It's a funny thing to peel sometimes, just strategically. But also, I saw you didn't peel it for that.
Nope, I've chopped it up a little bit and make it a little easier to go in and put it right on in. No, it has its own flavor. There are things that I would, if let's say I'm doing a saute, right, then I would definitely go ahead and peel the ginger.
Yes.
But there are recipes times when it just doesn't matter. It really does, and it's going to be prayed up. It's not going to turn bitter on me. It's not going to have and add some flavor that I don't want. So why are we putting ourselves through all of this, you know?
Right.
Pop it on up and add it in there.
Right.
It's great flavor.
Right. So some of the other kind of fun tactical recipes in the book. You know, there's like fried rice and hashes and, you know, things that you can do with leftovers. Because, I mean, a lot of people bristle at, they don't like leftovers. They turn up their nose. But you can transform them. I think there's even like the, what do they call that, bubble and squeak, where you have a mashed potato sort of pancake with like an egg on top or something.
Yeah, they do that.
In the book, I mean, you know, yeah.
For fried rice, you know, when we think about fried rice at any restaurant, fried rice is always made with the leftover rice, right? Because it's dried out. It's not going to stick to the pan. It's going to give the wok a chance to add that char kind of flavor to it, which is the excellent thing from fried rice. So taking rice, and I cook more than I am a rice head. So you
me
will
too.
Always
me
find
too.
Rice
in my refrigerator.
Fridge.
Me too. I have a big pot of it every week.
I cook enough so that I can have leftovers. Really not about just that meal. For me, I eat kimchi a lot in the morning. So I'll have a bowl of rice with kimchi and a fried egg. Or I'll just make fried rice. I mean, we do a lot of rice pudding here as well and keeps well in the fridge. A nice little touch at the end of the night for those who want to grab a quick snack. But, there's so much to do with rice. I feel like it's kind of that, if you look at cultures across the country, everyone's doing something different. So there's always something to cook with rice.
Yeah, I feel like that. And I feel like egg is an inexpensive, efficient sort of thing to hold together, like the leftover bits of vegetables as well. You know, the sort of frittata kind of a thing. Do you know what I mean? Just kind of, it makes it all come together and changes it up from just, ooh, there's some leftover vegetables, you know.
Agree. Yeah. I mean, beautiful frittatas and quiche. And,
yeah.
Even honestly, you know, when we do the unkakat, when we put it in, just let it kind of steam in the oven with a little extra flavor. And that's a great use for using the herbs and marinades as kind of just a seasoning, right? You know, all of that herb that we've had that we've brightened up with a little lemon juice and olive oil. We've pureed all of our tops. And just adding those to, again, even the quiche, it would be amazing. And so you kind of create these sauces that you can flavor how you want in your fridge, and they're ready for you to change the dish.
Yeah. Well, we only have like 2 minutes left, and I just wanted to say, I believe on Top Chef, you once made tamales, which might be my favorite food in the world. And, you know, I'm going to tell you my trick for no waste with tamales is just eat them all. Because I just love them. But being serious, though, that's a recipe that's great to make with friends, sort of assembly line style. Do you know what I mean? It's the work goes into it.
Yeah.
And it's like a manufacturing operation, and everybody can go home with a trayful. I mean, that's another way, and at the holidays and stuff, we cook with people. That's another way to be efficient, isn't it, in the kitchen, is to share the work and share the ingredients and share the results, right?
And sometimes just doing something a little different for Thanksgiving is always fun. My family, every maybe 5 years, they change it up, and then we go from our traditional to cooking something. 1 year we did kind of a Mexican feast, and we had all kinds of food, and it was fun. Traditionally, a lot of people do Christmas tamales, or they'll take leftover the turkey pieces and add them to the tamales right after Thanksgiving. And they do it with anything left over. And it's great. Again, making that salsa with whatever you have really works.
Yes, exactly. Well, Tiffany Deary, I'm excited about the new book, and I'm grateful to the James Beard Foundation for really, in all these different ways, doing this advocacy for this subject, because it's so important. And I appreciate your taking the time to talk with me today. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books and gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Thanks to all of you for listening too. And don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or facebook.com/awaytogarden or at awaytogarden on Instagram. And happy cooking and happy holidays and happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.